Close Encounters of a Third Level Kind was produced and edited by Anya Lyne and Cian Henniger. This programme was funded by Wired FM and the BCI Sound and Vision Funding Scheme.
I'm Michael Wall. I'm from Drumcolliher originally, which is out in West Limerick, just about 9 miles south of Newcastle West. And I'm working here in Mary Immaculate College as chaplain and as a lecturer. So I'm here as Roman Catholic priest as well. In terms of my journey to get here, obviously I would have gone to school in Drumcolliher, primary school. I would have gone to Munchen's, St. Munchen's here in Corbally, as a boarder. When I did Leaving Cert there, I had a number of options. One was possibly to come here, as that time people called got called for training, which I did. The other one was to do veterinary science in UCD, but in actual fact I opted to go to Maynooth, and went to Maynooth, did a BA in maths and philosophy, and then did theology degrees. When I was ordained, I was sent back to do postgraduate studies, and then came back to Limerick in, I think, 1982, and taught in the School of Commerce in Mulgrave Street. Then I went back to Dublin to lecture in Mater Dei Institute in Dublin. And then I came back to Limerick, and I was brought back to Limerick to be the Austin Advisor in second level schools in Limerick, a job which I really enjoyed. At the same time, I was also assistant diocesan secretary, and I became diocesan secretary then, that's secretary to the bishop, in 95, and I had that until 2000, and in 2000 I came in here.
What motivated you to join the priesthood? Or you never served as a parish priest, am I right in saying that?
Well, I did. I was actually in City Quay Parish in Dublin, and I was there from 85 to 87. It was quite a rundown area, mainly warehousing, derelict warehousing, and two big blocks of flats. So it was an area where a lot of people wouldn't have been in. They, in actual fact, saw everybody west of O'Connell Bridge as a culchie. So I was a real culchie as far as they were concerned, and they saw it almost as their job to kind of educate me and mind me. In terms of actually being in a rural parish or as a parish priest or as a curate, no, I haven't actually operated there at that level. I've always been around things like education, schools, third level education and administration.
But when you originally began in Maynooth, you went into Maynooth to join the priesthood?
Well, I suppose, yeah, I probably, if it was a choice, I would probably have gone and done a veterinary course. So I'd probably be out as a vet now, or probably now work with the Barmer Agriculture. There was probably a few cows and a few farmers probably lucky. And then I decided to go to Maynooth. And there wasn't anything traumatic about that. It was a decision you made. You went to Maynooth. Maynooth was a great place at the time. It was experimental. It was vibrant. There was a big student population there. But essentially, I suppose, that time, people going through Maynooth, a lot of my classmates, I think we would have started off with arts and science. We did arts and science about 39. I think 11 of that class actually finished. So it was the period of time when people dropped out of Maynooth at a very, very fast rate.
Tell us a bit about your current role as chaplain here.
I came here to the college in 2000, in the 1st of October 2000, as chaplain. Now, I had already been in the college, said you, and I would have been that year, I would have been in the college anyway, lectured in theology. So college wasn't that unusual for me. I suppose, sometimes going to third level institutions, particularly when you're a chaplain at third level institutions, you have to be a certain kind of character. People are young, they're kind of have young ideas, they're going places, there's a lot of life about it. And I think I like that. The other part of it would be, chaplain, okay, it's obviously a religious role, it obviously has a religious connotation to it. I do say mass here during the weekdays, but largely it's much more than that. It's about basically supporting students in their journey through college. And for some people, You know, and I said this myself, I remember being in college, I knew what the chaplaincy was, but I'd actually never been near them. Because, in actual fact, for lots of people, they can go come to college, it's no great problem to them. They go through, nothing major happens to them, they go to class, you know, and they don't need anybody minding. Other people, because of either their own personal kind of makeup or their difficulties with the study, need quite a lot of support, and so you'd have a lot of dealings with those. So we have, in a sense, the very vibrant, young, progressive ideas kind of part of student life, and you also have the other side, which can be quite sad, quite lonesome, people struggling, and so we're kind of supporting both sides.
You mentioned there you say mass every day here in the college. Other than that, what's your daily routine?
I'm basically here roughly from about 9 o'clock in the morning until very often nearly 9 o'clock at night. When I'm here, I also lecture, so I would have to prepare stuff. I have to give lectures, so maybe I might have one or two lectures most days, not all days, but one or two lectures most days. And then as well as that, you know, you have, there's various committees, there's various meetings, there's various kind of policy things to be dealt with in terms of college. It takes a certain amount of time. And also there is meeting students. Now, some of that meeting students is people who knock on the door and come in and want to do X, Y, and Z. Sometimes it's just simple things like they want a mask aren't signed. More times you meet students simply in the corridor, or you simply meet them in the canteen or wherever it is. And basically in that kind of role, what you're saying is, look, we're here, you can actually talk to us, we're not going to take the head off you. There's kind of almost a PR part of that. There would also be, I suppose, kind of formal kind of things in terms of, there's a whole lot of range of societies in the college that we, while we wouldn't necessarily drive them, we actually support them, help them along, you know, there's a whole range of that kind of stuff. There's also things like the international students, you have linkages with them, you know, and then we have obviously the chaplain student loan G14, which is basically a hospitality kind of place, and so you meet students there, the people come in just to pick up tea, whatever. It's being here, it's, yeah, doing the formal kind of things like the mass, that's the formal stuff. It's doing the other formal things like the lectures and preparing for those, and then there's the informal thing where you kind of meet students, support students. Some days you can be very busy, more days you might be so busy in terms of people meeting.
Okay. Generally, how do you think students perceive you?
I'm not so sure how they see it. I mean, I don't really have any. I mean, I would say students here are very nice. I've never actually come across one that's nasty. That's being honest. I mean, there are people here who wouldn't have been in church in a long time. There are people here who would be clearly agnostic. There are people here who would be atheistic. But I wouldn't have had, you know, we meet, we talk, we don't have any difficulty with each other in that kind of sense. I'm not so sure whether I'm what they think of priests or not, but, you know, I would tend to meet them at a human level, deal with a human level, and then if there are religious issues, we kind of move on to them. But basically the idea is meet people at a human level, deal with them at a human level, respect them at a human level, and work from there.
You mentioned earlier you've never met a nasty student.
Right.
Generally, what do you think students in in Mary Immaculate especially contribute to life in Limerick?
Well, basically, I mean, if you take the students in Mary Immaculate, they are, as a body of people, by the definition of the courses we have here, they're all quite intelligent people. I mean, what do they contribute? No, I mean, obviously, there's a, I suppose, two ways looking at it. There's a kind of selfish side to it, in the sense that these students come in here. They come in here for a purpose, either to kind of say to be primary school teachers or to study an arts degree and further themselves. So they're here for to get a certain amount of education, if you had. I think, what do they contribute to the city? I think they give life and vibrance to the city. I mean, if just even at a very base, pragmatic kind of level, there's a lot of nightclubs, so there's a lot of kind of pubs, there's a lot of kind of entertainment places, restaurants that wouldn't do half so well, except that we have student population. There's obviously a whole commercial site in terms of the providing the provision of accommodation, etc. But they also give, I think, a certain colour, a certain life, a certain vibrancy, a certain youthfulness to the city that it wouldn't otherwise have. It would be a poorer, a more impoverished type population. So I think that there's that vibrancy, and it's good for any place to have a mixture of, you know, older population, middle-aged population, and young population. So it gives that.
Do you think the students get a bad press, bad publicity around the city? Do you think people remember the bad things they do more so? And young people in general, I suppose?
I think sometimes, you know, people have notions about students being, you know, irresponsible, being drinking a lot, you know, been into drugs, been into all kinds of things. In reality, they're not. Yeah, there's like any group of people, like any, there'll be a few people who are into that. I think sometimes with regard to student drinking habits, they tend to talk more about it than do it. Older people probably drink a lot more. They're much more used to doing it. They're much more kind of, they have ways of getting home. They have money. They, you know, in a way the students haven't. The students tend to be all concerned in one bar, roaring and shouting and singing. But it's quite harmless because the master, at the end of the day, you know, you got, they're here. It's marginalisation. They're under a fair amount of pressure. They do have to actually sit in class at 9 o'clock in the morning. They do have to function. And if they don't do that, they won't get through. It's as simple as that. I mean, there are always a few unfortunate situations where people get carried away with the social life of it, and that has its a negative impact. But for the vast majority, that doesn't happen. The vast majority are very responsible. I would probably argue that from my own school student days to now, the students are much more conservative.
What's the future for Michael Wall?
Oh, well, no, that's a very good question. That's the one I didn't expect. I suppose, I don't know. I'm quite happy here, but obviously one can't stay here forever. And I presume ultimately, whenever I leave here, I will probably go to a parish somewhere. Now, of course, a lot depends. I'm not so sure how I would cope with a rural, you know, a small rural parish where there won't be much happening. But on the other hand, maybe there isn't much fear of that, in the sense that I think in terms of parishes, there will have to be major rationalisation anyway. I think a lot of parishes will have to be amalgamated. It'll be probably painful for people, but I do think that that's probably what's, and I'll probably be part of that in some form or fashion. But to give you the specifics, I don't know.
Close Encounters of a Third Level Kind was produced and edited by Anya Lyne and Cian Henniger. This programme was funded by Wired FM and the BCI Sound and Vision Funding Scheme.